It's time for From the Short Grass with Trey Shapp, a golf podcast for those who love golf, struggle with golf, and just like to enjoy the outdoors and fellowship with friends, all while chasing a ball around trying to put it in a 4 1/4 inch diameter hole. From the Short Grass is brought to you by Stevens Incorporated, an independent financial services firm with the freedom to focus on what matters most. Blackman Auctions. For over 80 years, better auctions have always been Blackman Auctions. Beachwood Pinnacle Hotels. We partner with you to deliver high-yield results by managing, developing, and investing in top-quality hospitality assets. And now, from the Short Grass, here is your host, Trey Shapp.
Welcome to another edition of From the Short Grass. I am your host, Trey Shapp. All right, I'm going to do something a little bit different in this episode of From the Short Grass. I am sitting down with Reverend Matthew Ruffner. He loves the game of golf, and you're going to be able to tell that in this interview. You're going to have to listen fast because we move pretty fast in this episode. Blackman Auctions. Since 1938, better auctions have been Blackman Auctions. Find them on the web, blackmanauctions.com. We're back with Matthew Ruffner after this.
Strength is measured not by the number of accounts. Strength is placing value on relationships. It's having the vision and the guts to invest in growth. It's the commitment to responsibly manage your money. At Stevens, we believe that our strengths build success, not only for us, but for our clients. Stevens, member NYSE, SIPC.
Heading to El Dorado to check out some live music or to play Mystic Creek? Stay at the Haywood, the only boutique hotel in the middle of downtown and the Murphy Arts District. If you are spending a weekend in Hot Springs, make plans now at the Marriott Courtyard close to Lake Hamilton and Oaklawn. Beachwood Pinnacle Hotel Group manages both of these fine properties, and you will rest easy knowing that your every need is taken care of. Beachwood Pinnacle Hotels on the web at bphotels.com.
I'm Thomas Blackman with Blackman Auctions. I've heard it said that sometimes there are two best days with real estate ownership. It's the day you buy it and the day you sell it. Depending on where you are in your journey, let me help. If you're looking for that outdoor getaway or that home in the city, I can help. If you're looking at selling that outdoor property you haven't seen in 3 years, I can help. Or selling that home in the city that you've outgrown, I can help. Blackman Auctions is your one-stop real estate company. Since 1938, better auctions are Blackman Auctions.
Welcome back to this edition of From the Short Grass. I am your host, Trey Shapp. Beachwood Pinnacle Hotel Group, Matthew Allen, Blair Allen, they know how to manage hotel properties. When you need an overnight place to stay, go to their website, bphotels.com, find one of their properties, and book it. You will not be disappointed. I came across Matthew Ruffner when COVID shut everything down in the world and we were streaming a church service at home, and my wife Amy said, why don't we find one in Dallas? And so I was able to find Preston Hollow Presbyterian Church in Dallas, Texas. Reverend Matthew Ruffner loves the game of golf and also grew up very close to one of the most prestigious courses in the world. On the tee, Reverend Matthew Ruffner.
Matthew, thanks for joining me on From the Short Grass. Kind of interesting how I came across you. During COVID, my wife and I, you know, we're watching church services. She's from Dallas, so she's like, well, let's try and find someone in Dallas. So I'm thinking about, okay, I remember this organist, Bradley Welch, that's played at Highland Park and everything. So I look and I Google where he is. He's here at Preston Hollow Presbyterian Church, and we stumble across you, and I notice you're wearing these golf polos. So I'm like, surely you play golf.
That's exactly right. I love that you found us through Bradley. He's just one of the greatest people on the face of the planet. And really, he's one of the most gifted individuals that you'll ever find. And you're right. I do. I wear a lot of golf polos because it's
You've
just
got one on today.
I do. You know what? They joke with me around here that this is my uniform. I wear basically three different colors of pants. And then I have polos from places that I've played.
And you stand out because on Sundays, it's bow ties.
It is bow ties on Sunday in our traditional service with the robe. And I grew up in South Carolina. And so I've been wearing bow ties my whole life. And I say to people, it's really difficult to spill something on a bow tie. I mean, you got to miss big.
When I reached out to you through email, what was your first thought when you read my email to set up this interview for the golf podcast?
I gave you a phone call because I thought this was a group of my buddies who were playing a prank on me, because we have one of those text threads that goes on for days. And so we're always sharing golf stuff and this golf podcast and that golf podcast. And so I thought it was a group of them coming to get me and just prank me. And so I called you and left you a voicemail. And when you called me back, I said, man, I got to tell you, I didn't think you were real. So that's how we got here, man. And this is a lot of fun.
Should we prank your friends?
You know what? I think we absolutely should.
We'll have to find time to do that.
Yeah.
Well, I'm down in Dallas at least once a month. I mean, we can find time to do
it. I think a good prank is just an act of love.
When did you first pick up a golf club? When did you fall in love with the game?
I think I got my first set of golf clubs. I was either 8 or 9 years old. I don't know what your first set of golf clubs was like, but mine were cut down Hogan blades. And then we had real woods. And so I think I got my first set of golf clubs when I was 9. And I grew up playing football and baseball. And so I had a baseball swing. But I grew up in Aiken, South Carolina. And so everyone I knew played golf in some capacity. So I probably picked up my first golf club 8, 9 years old.
Did you pay attention to the Masters back then, being so close to Augusta National?
I tell people in Dallas, they say, the Masters, have you been? The Masters for us was like Mardi Gras in New Orleans. You know, it's a cultural thing for us. Spring break was Masters week. Back in the day, if you didn't make it spring break, no one was going to go to school anyway.
Right.
And that was back, you know, when my mom was in high school. You could walk over and just go to the practice rounds. I mean, that was a different time and a different era. But I often tell my family now, I would have done anything as a kid to have the access, the digital content that the Masters puts out during Masters week. I was a kid who was sitting at home with the news on, waiting for them just to go 10 minutes, you know, with an update from Augusta, just to catch a glimpse. I mean, I was that kid who was waiting just to get my eyes on any news source. And, you know, growing up there, we went, but we didn't go every day, which was almost worse.
I've been one time able to get tickets to the Tuesday of the 2013 Masters practice round. I'm telling you, Matthew, it was, I'm saying this to a pastor.
Right. Okay.
Heaven on earth.
Right.
I mean, come on.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's a better place where everything is just perfect.
Right.
And it's hard to say perfect because there's only been one perfect person to ever walk the face of the earth.
That's right. And, you know, as a Presbyterian, we have a term that places are known as thin places, where heaven and earth are indistinguishable. And so there are different places that you go and, you know, the energy is just a little different. And I hear that's what you're saying about Augusta. I mean, there is something special when you walk onto those grounds. You go, I'm just, cabin pressure has shifted. You know what I mean? Or like the first tee at the Old Course. You stand on that first tee and you ask someone, what is it like? And every person I've ever asked that question to, you can be an amateur, you can be a professional, and you're at a loss for words. I dated a girl in high school, and they went over for a practice round, and her little brother, you know, decent golfer, was sitting there, and Jack Nicklaus was hitting a shot. It must have been a Monday or Tuesday, looked over and called him out into the fairway and dropped the ball and said, I need you. You try to hit one up there.
Oh, my gosh.
And this kid, I guess he was 12, 13. Hit the ball on the green. And Jack gave him a sleeve of golf balls. That's the kind of stuff that happens on Monday and Tuesday at Augusta. And I think it is, that's the culture of what makes that tournament special, because it is a tradition unlike any other. And yet, Monday and Tuesday, I think, reveal that just as much as the coat ceremony on Sunday. There was this culture in Aiken, and I don't know if it was just among my family and our friends, but there was a culture, if you knew someone who had never been and tickets came your way, we always prioritized the person who had never been. Because it was the gift that you wanted everyone to have. And I can remember, you know, being in middle school and, you know, tickets would shake out like on a Wednesday or something, and our next door neighbor had never been. And it's like, these tickets can't be for us now. I mean, like,
wow.
The next door neighbor needs
what
to
what a gift.
Well, I mean, but it's the culture of the place.
Yeah.
You know, it's the spirit of that I think extends. You know, you said it's heaven on earth. Well, it's that thin place mentality that actually extends beyond the golf course, where people, they show up as the best versions of themselves. It inspires them to do that. It's the spirit of the Masters that extends through the patrons to make that true. And that is one of the things that makes it special.
Growing up, did you play high school golf?
Oh my gosh, man. This is funny. So people will say, are you a good golfer?
That question's later on in the episode.
Well,
we can get to it now.
Well, I mean, here's what's funny. There are two questions I've never heard any golfer say yes to. The first one is, are you good? And the second one is, do you get to play often? I've never heard a golfer, professional, amateur, anyone go, yeah, I'm really good. And yeah, I really get to play all the time.
Maybe Tiger Woods, because when he was the captain of the President's Cup team, and he's like, well, and with my last captain's pick, I'm going to pick
myself. That's right.
Yeah.
You know, but that's Tiger, and that's one of the things we love about Tiger. Tiger is saying, I will trust my game and my game under pressure above anyone else's, right? So I grew up in Aiken, and there are golfers, and then they're golfers. I made the middle school golf team as an alternate my seventh grade year. And then my eighth grade year, we only played nine holes, and I think I shot 44.
And I didn't make it?
Oh, I missed the cut by five. There was a seventh grader, Kevin Kisner, who...
Oh, wow, yeah.
Who,
heard that name.
I can't remember what Kis shot, but my memory, I think, is 39. I mean, those guys are good. My high school, I think they won the state championship 12 years in a row. The guys, when I was in high school, every one of those players played Division I. I mean, those are golfers, man.
Yeah, yeah,
I mean,
good.
I'm an 80s player, and that'll get you beat by 15.
Well, when you're playing them, yeah.
Right.
You're right. So you go off to college. You go Presbyterian College first?
Yeah, Blue Hose. That's right. Okay. I 4 years at PC, and it was the right place for me.
Did you find a place to play there?
In college, we'd play over in Greenwood. We'd play up in Greenville. We'd play in Spartanburg. We never played Musgrove Mills, and that's a really hard golf course. It's probably in their better wisdom that they don't let college folks out there, you know?
I can understand that. So after that, you decided to go to seminary.
Yeah.
Right?
So in undergrad, there was this deep sense that I wanted my life to count for something bigger, and that I wanted to be a part of making the world a better place. And so I wrestled with that sentiment. You know, was it going to be going to business and make some money and then go into politics, or was it going to be working through local municipalities? Or, you know, the church was always this place where I had a home, and I sensed that it awakened something deep within me. And so it was in college where I sensed that maybe that was the pull. I took a year to discern that, and then ended up in Atlanta at Columbia Seminary.
And so you decided, okay, I need to make some money. You decided to caddy at Eastlake.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, when anyone who's in grad school, that is an existence where you got to scrape some things together.
Mm-hmm.
So there were some folks that I knew that had caddied at Eastlake, and they were always looking for caddies. And so I'm a golf nut. I need to make some money. And so, yeah, I end up caddying at Eastlake for the first year and a half.
Not a bad place to be caddying, I might add. Eastlake is phenomenal.
You might call it one of those thin places. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's the grounds of Bobby
that.
Jones.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's the home of Bobby Jones. It's in the Eastlake neighborhood where Mr. Cousins has literally been part of transforming that neighborhood and the world. And the history there alone, I mean, you can't walk into that clubhouse or stand on that first tee and not sense it.
You're caddying at Eastlake, and I guess one afternoon, one morning or something, the caddy master's like, Matthew, your bag's down there on the practice tee, and you walk down there, and whose name is on the bag?
So the bag tag said Henry Aaron on it, and mm-hmm. I'm a kid from South Carolina, and
you know the Braves.
I know exactly who that is, and remember, I was a football baseball guy in high school, and so I read that tag, and I think, surely something is off here. I don't think they meant to give this bag to me, so I walk back up the hill, and I go into the caddy barn, and I said, are you sure that bag's for me? And he said, that's your bag, and I said, fine, I'm happy for that to be
pretty
my bag.
Matter-of-factly.
It was... he had a way of communicating. And so I accepted it, and I said, buddy, I got it. And sure enough, I start wiping down the clubs, and sure enough, Mr. Aaron comes in a golf cart, and they drop him off, you know, where the range is at Eastlake, and he walks over. And I will never forget shaking his hand for the first time. I mean, his hand enveloped mine, and it was strong, you know. And this wasn't his playing days, obviously. From the moment I shook his hand, I knew this was going to be a special day. And it was. It was a gift to be able to walk Eastlake Golf Club with him and to watch him hit golf shots. He was kind. He was generous. And he was not just that way with me. He was that way with everyone. We get over to 8 before they flip the nines, and it's that par 4, and depending on your tees, it's a risk reward. You can try to drive it, but they have that bunker that's
right in front of the green.
Right in front of the green. Mr. Aaron, Hank Aaron, hit it in that bunker, and he gets down in it, and he gives it, you know, 3 or 4 whacks, and he can't get this ball out. And he turns around, and he looks at me, and he goes, "How the hell do I get out of this bunker?" And I said, "Well, Mr. Aaron, if you'll open up that club face just as wide as you can, and if you will swing as hard as you can, but just hit, you know, like an inch behind it, I think that thing will pop out." He said, "Might as well give it a shot." And he does exactly that. And that ball pops straight up in the air. It takes one bounce and stops 2 inches from the cup. And he looks at me and he throws his arms up in the air and he goes, "Like that?" And I said, "Like that." And inside I'm thinking, I just taught Hank Aaron how to hit a bunker shot. Are you kidding me?
And so, you just gave Hank Aaron a lesson.
Yeah. So do as I say, not as I do. Like, yeah. It, and that memory, I think about that from time to time. But the other thing I remember about that day of just walking and hearing him reflect, you know, on golf and then his years with the Braves and what it's like to even hit a bad golf shot was when we finished. I've never seen anything like it at East Lake. And I've had, you know, the opportunity to play out there a decent amount since I was a caddy. And I still have never seen anything like it. When we were finishing, other caddies dropped their bags from surrounding holes, and folks came out of that clubhouse, staff, the folks even at the halfway house there, everyone walked to congregate to meet him, to say thank you to him. There was a sense of admiration among almost everybody on the golf course that day for who he was, what mm-hmm. he had done, and the impact that he had made, certainly in Atlanta. And what is special to me about that memory is this was people of all generations and people who came from all kinds of walks of life. And to think that there was a person that had that kind of pull and respect, that's one of the memories I will never forget about that day. Yeah.
That's amazing. And you've got his autograph on the yardage book.
Yeah. So in my office, years ago, I told part of that story in a sermon, and someone said, well, do you have the yardage book? I did, like in a drawer in my house. And they said, don't you think you should get that thing framed? And I thought, yeah, I probably should. And so, yeah, it's framed in my office now. And I'm really glad the person suggested that I did it. I look at it, you know, it's right behind my desk.
It's pretty cool. That's not the only autograph you have on a yardage book. I see one over there that, is that Jason Day?
Yeah, that's Jason Day's autograph. A couple of years back, one of the folks who was on the search committee that found me and really brought me to Preston Hollow, guy from Pine Bluff, Arkansas, and he's a big golfer. And so he called me and he said, listen, I'm going to play in the Byron Nelson Pro-Am. You want a caddy for me? And I said, absolutely. I'd love to caddy. And he said, well, here's the deal. I'm going to go to the draw party. I'll text you. The top two spots, AT&T takes those. So we're probably not going to caddy for Jordan. And I said, okay, that's, yeah, totally fine. He said, but we'll figure out who's remaining. So he texted me. He said, we got number three. And I'm texting him back. And I'm like, well, who's on the board at three? And he goes, Jason Day's on the board. And he's the number one player in the world. We got to take him, right? And I'm like,
yes. Absolutely,
you got to take him. He said, we got Jason Day. And Jason was number one in the world at the time. And so we get over there at the Four Seasons. We're warming up. And we get in the van with Jason Day and his caddy. And this was, tour players have to play in these, a number of these.
Right.
And I don't know how I would be if I was asked to do something like that. He could not have been more hospitable.
Matthew, have you ever made a hole-in-one or albatross double eagle?
I made a one out at Northwood Club here in Dallas. Northwood hosted the 1952 U.S. Open, and I'm playing out there that week after Christmas, which in my world and in my life, that is the greatest week because mm-hmm. you've had one of your biggest seasons. So I'm playing out there with a buddy of mine. We're only going to play nine, then go and be with the kids and all that. And so we go, and I'm playing decently, and then we get up to 16. We teed off on the back, and we're playing. It's a long 205-yard par three, sort of up the hill, water coming down. And I step up, and I hit five iron, and I said, I can't hit a five iron any better. And he gets up and he hits, and I go, man, I don't think you can hit the ball any better. And he goes, no, I don't think I can either. And we didn't think anything about it because the sun was just beating down on. So we walk up and we're talking about whatever, and we get up and there's one ball. He looks over and he goes,
no,
that's mine. Maybe I smoked it. Maybe it just went over. So I'm walking around. He walks to the hole and starts giggling. And then he pulls out his cell phone. I look at him and I go, no way. And he goes, yeah, man. And I said, you're kidding me. And he said, And I walked over, and there was my ball in the bottom of the cup. I mean, high five, the whole thing. And then I look at him, and I go, we got to go. I said, the sun is going down. We teed off on the back, and we got to play the front nine for this to count. And he goes, we got to go. So I call my wife, and I said, Sarah, I just made a one on 16. And she goes, that's great. And I said, I don't think you understand. I got to play the front nine for this thing to count. And she said, I don't think you understand. I have a couple patients, and I literally have to be with them. So you better figure out who's going to pick up the kids. So I'm like texting everyone I know, can you pick up the kids? And so we sure enough, man, we sprinted around. We finished the front nine, and I'll never forget it, man. It was a cool day.
I guess word got out, too, that preacher boy here made a hole in one.
You know what? It did get out later. And so people will say to me, have you made another one? And I said, not even close. And I play, you know, in a group made up of the same folks. And so almost without fail, I'll get up to the tee on 16 and someone will go, has anyone ever made a one here? Which is the invitation,
right?
You know, to block right. it right or something.
Right.
So they do it to mess with me.
They but rib
it,
you. They
was,
rib you.
It was pretty special. It was the first one on 16 after the reopen, so that was cool.
Matthew, if you were to preach a sermon about your golf game, what would the title be?
Four. Yeah, I think I'd call it four. And I think I would talk about how often in our life do we think we know how to hit the perfect shot? And you stand over a situation, and just like in golf, thoughts go through your head of all the things that could go wrong that actually sometimes never do. But it distracts you. It takes you out of the present moment enough to lead you to hit a shot that ends up somewhere totally different. And just like in golf, it's funny now that we think about this. How many times have you watched someone in a playoff situation or even in your life, you hit a drive and it goes in another fairway or something?
Oh, I've done it. Yeah.
Right. And then you get over there and you learn, I actually have a better angle from over here. And so the shot that you would have never chosen to hit actually led you to a place that you would have never been before, and you end up making birdie. And so how often is that true in our life, where we think that we have a plan, and if we can just do exactly what we think we need to do, then everything's going to be okay? And actually, it's probably the missed hit shots that we learn the most. They humble us, and they actually present an option that we had never seen before.
Do you pray before you play, and what would that prayer be?
There's a writer, Anne Lamott, and she says there are only three real prayers: help, thanks, wow. And then she says there's actually a fourth. Oh, crap. So if that is true, I pray all four of those. Every time I play golf, you know, I heard Bobby Knight a number of years ago. He says, you know, these guys who are stepping up to a free throw line and they claim that God's on their side about whether or not they're going to make the basket. And he says, no offense, you know, I can appreciate everybody's faith and all of that. I just think maybe the good Lord has some bigger things going on than whether or not some kid makes a free throw. And I think about that way in my golf game. Certainly God has bigger things to worry about than whether or not I make a putt. I also believe that God is with us in all times and all places, and so therefore God's with us. You can sort that out.
What do you and your buddies play for? Coke? Dinner? Lunch? Just bragging rights?
Oh man, I think that anyone who ever plays for anything at the end of the day is playing for bragging rights. And you play for stories. Over the years, we'll put some trophies together. I have a group of guys that I'll play with from time to time. And so we'll put a little kitty together. But this is my stipulation. At the end of the day, whoever wins it gets to choose the organization that they're going to donate it to.
Very nice.
So I try to invite people to think about that round actually could benefit someone other than themselves. And so that's always fun.
What person in the Bible do you compare your game to?
In the Bible, that's a fascinating question. You know what? We'll probably say Moses because he spends a lot of time in the wilderness. And so Moses knows what it means to suffer, and I've never met a golfer who didn't. So how about that?
That's a good one. Do you believe there's golf in heaven?
You know, my understanding of heaven is a unity with God and a flourishing for all people. And so I can't imagine, as a Presbyterian, by the way, from the motherland of Scotland, that heaven would be void of golf. Because to answer your question in a different way, you've defined heaven as a golf course. So I would say yes.
When you hit a bad shot, what do you say? Because I know what some people say.
Out loud?
Yeah.
Or inside?
Both.
I probably say what you say from time to time. I will often say these days, seriously? Like, where did that come from? Or are you kidding? But from time to time, I think golfers find common ground in what we say after a bad shot.
You've played in Scotland.
Yeah.
Take me through trips to Scotland and getting to play like the old course and some of the real nice courses over there.
Our choir was on choir tour before COVID, and I was invited to preach at St. Giles Cathedral in Edinburgh, which is the home of John Knox. And so I went over 5 days early with one of my best buddies from undergrad. And so we put together a little trip. We got the ballot for the old course. We found out the day before we flew over there. That's a dream. You sort of think there's no way that you're going to play it, and then to find out 24 hours. So we landed, got our car in Edinburgh, and drove straight to St. Andrews. We showered at the clubhouse, got on that first tee box, and you know what that's like. I've never talked to anyone who's ever played St. Andrews and doesn't talk about that opening tee shot. There are not many places that you're going to play where 100 or 200 people are going to watch your opening tee shot. That's nerve-wracking alone,
right,
if you're playing with just you and your friends. But to do it and they're 200 people from all over the world, I mean, there's something, it amps it. We were really fortunate to play the Old Course. We put a trip together that time, and we hit North Berwick. We hit Kings Barnes while we were there.
Oh, yeah.
We hit Crail Golfing Society, which was cool. And you know, that's where R&A members play because that's their local weekend hangout, and it's basically a public golf course. The history there is unlike anything else. And I was really fortunate this past summer. I was granted a sabbatical, and so I was able to carve out some time with three of my best friends. And this doesn't happen often. Man, you know what a gift this is. And so we spent 6 days together. I'm one of those people on a golf trip that we got to get in as much golf as possible. I'm one of those people who thinks, can we play 36? And is there a putting green that we can go have a putting tournament on? You know, and can we get some lights on that thing after we've had dinner? And
right.
Like, I'm
midnight.
That's it. I'm a golf junkie in that way. And so this past trip, we were able to hit the Old Course and, you know, North Berwick and Carnoustie and Royal Aberdeen. And we were able to play Dunbar. We played Ely. We played Castle Course. I mean, it was a lot of golf, man. And we would play 36 a day. And then we had this Airbnb in St. Andrews, and we'd get wedges. And in the backyard, we'd have chipping contest after dinner. I mean, it was just that kind of golf trip.
Best golf course you've ever played?
I've been really fortunate to play some really, really good golf courses. Pine Valley would certainly be. That is a different experience. And I say to people all the time, Pine Valley par really doesn't mean anything. I mean, Pine Valley is just a different thing. You know, I'd put Carnoustie there. You know, the golf course I don't think gets as much recognition is Southern Hills.
Oh, and Tulsa, yeah.
Southern Hills is a special place, man.
Yeah.
And that's a hard golf course.
It is.
That is a championship golf course. We were not members in Aiken, but I think one of my favorite golf courses on the planet is Palmetto Golf Club in Aiken. It's the second oldest 18 holes in the country. You know, Alistair McKenzie went over to Palmetto when he was doing Augusta to transition Palmetto's greens from sand to grass. And there's that history there, but that golf course and that layout is really special, man.
Fantasy foursome, living or deceased. You and three others that you could play a round of golf with, who would they be?
All right. I think about this question from time to time, and I think about it in different ways. So I'm going to cheat. Ready?
Okay.
I'm going to go foursome that I get to caddy for. And I was thinking about this the other day. Old Tom, Bobby Jones, Lee Trevino, and Tiger Woods. And I would be the caddy.
You're going to have four bags?
I mean, buddy, I'll take a cart and drive them. But I was thinking about this the other day. If you had those four people, who in that group is not going to learn something?
Exactly.
Can't you imagine what old Tom would say after he watched Tiger Woods hit a golf ball? And can't you imagine like Bobby Jones and Lee Trevino and Tiger talking about how to hit these weird little shots and how they figured out how to snap it around that corner? I mean, I just think it'd be fun to listen to those guys.
In your foursome there, I mean, Lee Trevino, he's the one that is going to carry the conversation, right?
I think about Lee and he's hilarious. I mean, Lee Trevino can consistently make Tiger Woods laugh. It is always fun to have a personality like that in your group. And so Lee Trevino has to be in the group. And I think the other thing that I would love about Lee being in the group is, can't you imagine like Lee Trevino and Bobby Jones and Tiger Woods standing around talking about, yeah, but this is how I learned how to hit that like stinger out of the pine straw. Or, you know, this is how Tiger hits that giant cut. And I just think they would geek out on golf shots.
No doubt.
Can't you imagine those guys like in the fairway? You know, I was really fortunate to play Peachtree several times when I was in Atlanta, and that place is special. There are all these stories about Bobby Jones when he was building that place, and he dropped golf balls. And he'd knock it in from, you know, wherever. And he'd say, no, it's not right. You need to go and fix this. And I can just imagine if you had those four guys in a foursome, can't you imagine then dropping a couple golf balls and going, yeah, but if you would have hit that fade here, can't you just see Bobby Jones like knocking it up there? And then Tiger going, I would have never seen that. You know, and I just think for me, sort of the golf geek in me would love to just be able to watch that and experience and hear them talk about golf courses, golf shots, and how they learned it. I just think it'd be special. You know, three players that I'd love to play with. This past summer was pretty special for me, man. And to have three best friends that have known you for a long time. And so you don't have to be anything other than who you are. And you can chunk it off the first tee at St. Andrews. And they still text you about it like I did. I mean,
no, you didn't.
It's the best.
Matthew, thanks so much for your time. I've really enjoyed this.
Trey, thanks for having me, man. I really appreciate what you do and how you are getting the game of golf out there in a different way. And this has been, honestly, it's been a blast. So thanks.
Traveling to Fayetteville to watch a game? Forgot to book a room for the night? Beachwood Pinnacle Hotel Group has you covered. Stay where the fans stay. Staybridge Suites is just south of Baum Walker Stadium and is an all-suite hotel within walking distance of Baum Walker, Bud Walton, and Razorback Stadium. Or you could stay at the Comfort Inn and Suites with newly remodeled rooms throughout the entire property. Find them on the web web at bphotels.com. Beachwood Pinnacle Hotels.
This is Thomas Blackman with Blackman Auctions. Looks like this podcast has really taken off. The guests are incredible. Stories are captivating. It might be Trey's hard work and dedication to the sport of golf and his sincere interest in his guests. Or could be the support of an 85-year-old auction company that does real estate and industrial auctions all over the country and is owned by a guy that doesn't play golf worth a flip. You guys listen to the podcast. I think you know the answer. If you want to learn about the game of golf, listen to Trey. If you want to know about auctions, call me. Since 1938, better auctions are Blackman Auctions.
My thanks to Reverend Ruffner for the time. Remember, when you find your ball mark on the green, fix it and a couple of more, and I hope to see you from the Shortgrass.
You've been listening to From the Shortgrass, a weekly podcast dedicated to the game of golf. This has been a presentation of the Buzz Radio Network.